Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
I am Madison Timmons.
I'm Chris Soucy.
And we're paranormal specialists who live in the most haunted city on Earth, Savannah, Georgia. Every day is Halloween in our line of work, so join us as we spin true tales of haunts, murders, and disturbing Savannah history. I'm Madison.
I'm Chris.
And welcome to the most haunted city on Earth.
Maddie, hit it.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the most haunted city on Earth. My name is Madison Timmons.
I'm Chris Soucy.
And I'm Meth Hogs.
You're Meth Hogs.
I'm Meth Hogs.
I hope you're not Meth Hogs.
It's a bunch of Meth Hogs in a JT suit.
Oh, yeah.
You're a Meth Hog in a trench coat.
Meth Hog in a trench coat. I just turned into a country music.
But yes, we are back with part two of Kentucky Cryptids.
Kentucky Cryptids.
With a K.
Yes, yes.
And so.
Yeehaw.
Yeehaws.
Oh, look at that.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. I got that up for you.
Very nice.
Go for it real fast. Let's talk about it.
Cool.
And pound
of
vote.
And for those of you who cannot see what JT just put up on the screen, basically, we are up for quite a few categories for Connect Savannah's Best of Savannah this year for 2024. So Connect Savannah, it does a thing where they do the Best of Savannah competition every single year. It's a big deal in Savannah. It's probably one of the biggest awards that you could receive. So it's always a big deal for us, especially as small business owners. And so we would greatly appreciate if you guys can vote for us. So we're up for Best Local Actress, is myself. Best Local Theater Production, the Savannah Underground, which is our immersive theater. Best Local Theater Director is JT. That'll be under John Taylor Timmons. That's his professional name. Best Place to Work, the Savannah Underground. Best Local TikTok at Haunted City Podcast. Best Local Influencer is Enika Edenfield. And Best Local Podcast is The Most Haunted City on Earth. So, yes.
Boom.
Definitely, y'all go vote for us. You can vote every single day. And if you are not already on the Haunted City Podcast fan base on Facebook, Ashley and Dawn have been posting like crazy
about everything.
They've been absolutely killing it. And they post the link, so you can find the link there as well.
But quick interjection.
Yes.
I just realized, if anybody out there has any connection to Michael Ian Black.
Oh,
Michael Ian Black, amazing comedian. Founding member of Upright Citizens Brigade, or he's actually lives in Savannah. He actually wrote a ghost story from his house here in Savannah.
Oh wow!
So if anybody has any connection to him, point him our direction, because we would love to have him on.
I actually think to hear
his ghost story.
I actually might have a connection to that.
Yeah,
because
absolutely,
I had a professor who used to perform with Upright
Citizens. David Stork?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes, absolutely. So I think that he has been, you know, kind of active in the downtown scene. I've seen him around. If I do, I will probably accost him. But if anybody out there has any connection, we would love to have him on and hear his ghost story.
Yes. And if you are listening yourself, which I highly doubt that he's listening.
It seems unlikely.
But if he is listening, we want you on the show.
Yes.
So now we're going to get into some good old Kentucky cryptids.
We are, but we're going to address the big red button. We have
red button. There's a sign on this button that says do not press, and I have been showing incredible self-control by not pressing the big red button.
That's why I put it there, Chris, because you'd press it immediately if you saw it. You would.
But it's so tempting.
No. Anyway, all right. So this idea came from a Parajunkie. She just commented and was like, we need a button. And you'll see what it says. And I thought that it was like, I thought it was genius. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, I think we do need that. So we do have it now. It's going to be part of the podcast. We won't use it every episode, but it definitely will be something that I believe that y'all will be able to use. And no, not yet. I just wanted to give a massive shout out to our Parajunkies. I know we talk about them every episode.
As but we should.
Like, but like they, we like we listen to the Parajunkies like hard. They have created a I would argue the majority of this show was their ideas at this point, right? So just a big shout out to everyone who is a Parajunkie, everyone who in the future that will become a Parajunkie and give us even better ideas. But I think now is the time to press the big red button. So go ahead and move the big red button just a little bit towards y'all, Madison. Okay. It should be heard through the microphone, but you can go ahead and put your microphone over it. Yeah, there we go. And here we go.
That is correct. Oh. We needed this button.
We did need this button. This is, well, how many times have we said that specifically? Yes. I love, is that you?
It's me.
That's so funny because it sounds like a 1920s version of a ghost.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the show.
That's what you sound like.
We just got a puppy. We're fostering a puppy.
Oh,
and we were talking about doing the dog talking buttons.
Yeah,
for the puppy. This would be a hilarious dog talking button. Like the dog's like, oh, it's bath time.
So it's funny.
I like it.
JT and I did the button thing with Argyle because she's smart enough. We're like, she would absolutely figure this out. And the ghost started using the button.
And then we filmed it.
We did.
We did.
It happens all the time until eventually we finally got rid of the buttons. But, you know, it's like it was happening all the time. So, yeah, you should try that and find out. And Megan will kill us. Megan will kill us if that happens.
If it turns into a ghost.
Yes.
It's a cute puppy and seems smart. It's only seems. But it's 10 weeks old, so
you never know.
It could be a lie.
Tell me this.
It only knows how to pee on things now, but it's smart about it. So
it's smart about its peeing.
What kind of dog?
It is a pit bull, but I think it's a pit lab because it's got a longer snout. You know, it's not as stumpy faced.
Stompy faced.
What? Stop that. How dare you?
Frankie. Oh, yeah. Michaela Gowan said, JT said, copyright strike avoided.
That's so cute. That is a baby.
Oh, Pumpkin.
Yeah.
Here, show the camera.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Can you see that? What is the puppy's name?
Yes. So when we got it, they called it Farquaad, which we are
Farquaad.
Not.
Farquaad.
We're not going to call this puppy Farquaad because A, it's weird to say out loud.
Yeah.
And B, we just didn't feel that it was a Farquaad, so we decided on Oberon.
Oberon.
Ooh, Oberon's cool.
Oberon's a great name. It we actually call him Obi. Is mm-hmm. And we call it Obi. It is based on. So of course it's Midsummer Night's King of the Fairies, but. Megan and I listened to a book series called the Iron Druid series, and the Iron Druid has a dog named Oberon, and it's a major character throughout the whole series of the books. And we just love that series of books. We love the character of Oberon from the books, and of course, Fairy King. So
that's way better than what I was thinking. I was thinking Brussels sprout.
Megan was like, "We need to name it a food." Yeah, that's what you do. You name dogs foods. You know, cheddar.
Yeah. Now, Megan and I are on the same wavelength here. But Oberon's a cool name. That's a strong name.
Right. You grow into an Oberon. Yes. Like now he's Obi, but one day he'll be an Oberon.
When he's old.
He's wise.
Yes.
He's our first cryptid.
Yes. Yeah. Oberon.
The first cryptid. Fae dog.
Fae dog. And fae cat. We have all the fae animals.
We do have all the fae animals.
But all right.
Oh, we have the Cauldron of Cryptids.
The Cauldron of Kentucky Country Cryptids. Don't abbreviate that.
No. So what are you doing?
Oh, my God.
I didn't mean for this to happen. This went very
I'm reaching into the cauldron. And what I brought out is, hey, the Hopkinsville Goblins.
Perfect.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. The Hopkinsville Goblins.
Goblins. Oy, that's it.
So, the Hopkinsville Goblins case, also known as the Kelly Hopkinsville Encounter, is a well-known alleged extraterrestrial encounter, which is why I wore my alien shirt today.
Aliens!
Aliens. That occurred in 1955 in Kelly and Hopkinsville in Christian County, Kentucky. The incident has become a part of popular folklore and is often cited in discussions of UFO sightings and supposed alien visitations. So the date and location. The event took place on the night of August 21st, 1955, at a farmhouse near Kelly and Hopkinsville. The primary witnesses were the Sutton family and their friends, and in total, there were 11 people at the farmhouse, including several adults and children. The witnesses described encountering small humanoid beings. These beings were reported to be around 3 feet tall, with pointed ears, thin limbs, and long arms. Hmm. Sounds like a goblin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Goblin-esque.
Very. And they were said to have large, round eyes and a metallic silver skin. So,
might have been dealing with elves.
Yeah, honestly.
The elves.
That's a good point. So the encounter began on the evening of August 21st, 1955, after one of the family members, Billy Ray Taylor, that's a country name.
Oh, yeah.
Billy Ray Taylor.
claimed to have seen a bright, unidentified flying object land in a gully near the Sutton family farmhouse. Taylor and another man, Lucky Sutton, were...
What? Lucky Sutton.
Lucky Sutton.
Lucky Sutton, get down there and look at them silver-eyed people.
Could you imagine? we're the first to report seeing the creatures. After Taylor's report of the UFO sighting, they claimed to have seen a strange creature approaching the house from the woods. The family became frightened and armed themselves.
Of course, because it's Kentucky.
Exactly. And they claimed that over the next few hours, these beings repeatedly approached the house, peering in through windows and doors, leading to a series of confrontations. The family members reported firing their guns at the creatures, seemingly without effect.
It's like the Hatfields and McCoys versus the aliens.
Basically. There was little physical evidence of the creatures. The family claimed that the beings made a metallic sound when struck by bullets.
Oh, well, they were probably wearing spacesuits.
Exactly.
They weren't silver-skinned. They were wearing
spacesuits. And the family claimed that the beings and that they floated above the ground and could move with considerable speed.
Nice.
Eventually, the situation became so intense that the family decided to leave the farmhouse and seek help. They drove to the Hopkinsville police station and reported the incident. Their visibly shaken state convinced the police to investigate. Police officers and other officials visited the farmhouse, and they didn't find any evidence of the creatures, but noted signs of distress among the family members and evidence of gunfire around the home. Following the event, the story quickly attracted media attention, leading to a mix of public intrigue and skepticism. The family was subjected to significant media scrutiny and public attention, which they found overwhelming, as you can imagine. despite investigations, there was no conclusive evidence that the event was a hoax. The family members, including those without any interest in UFOs or science fiction, remained consistent in their accounts. Huh. The Kelly Hopkinsville encounter had a lasting impact on the family and the local community. It remains a significant case in the UFO folklore due to the intensity of the encounter and number of witnesses involved.
Mm.
So
that is very
so. Elle actually just said, "OMG, my childhood best friend's mom is from there. I used to stay there before summer camp." What?
Wow.
Yeah, that's just someone hit that button for me.
We need a microphone just on it.
Yeah, right? I know, right? Yeah. Just a little mini mic.
Just a little mini mic on it.
No, that they're so interesting. It's like
it's fascinating, and it's it's also interesting to note that this type of entity is not uncommon, especially in the foothills and the mountains.
Right.
You know, and you hear about it all the time. Diminutive creatures.
Sound like the moon-eyed
humanoids,
people.
The moon-eyed people. Mm-hmm. Even the story of Rip Van Winkle, if you remember, he is up in the mountains in upstate New York, and he runs into and runs afoul of little people who are bowling in the mountains. But that notion that there is a species or a class of creature that looks humanoid,
right,
lives in the woods, pointy ears, you know, the classic goblin elf notion, because I think if you actually go around the world, you're going to find in mountainous regions these small humanoid beings. What's interesting about this is the floating.
Yes,
I think that the floating makes it very interesting, and yeah, and that they move at speed. They're floating, being bulletproof. That's kind of almost normal for the type of entities you're talking about.
Right.
Because when you talk like elves and elven, they're well known for making great armor.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. Because they're blacksmiths.
Right.
Usually.
They're blacksmiths or they are gifted like mithril steel and all that good stuff. So it depends on what kind of fantasy elements you are drawing from, because most fantasy creatures actually are drawn from folklore and local legend, and you know, these are not, this wasn't someone just sitting down and making up elves. Elves were actually a part of a well-known belief structure,
right?
And people believed in these creatures that lived and inhabited the woodlands and the mountainous regions. So yeah, it's very fascinating. And I love that they call them goblins, and they don't call them aliens.
Right.
Like, they don't go in for – because it's obviously an alien encounter as far as all the story elements, but they call them goblins.
They're like, we can handle the thought of a goblin, but not an alien.
Alien, I don't know.
But it sounds like it could – if you're going on the alien front, it sounds like it could be like a species, like a subspecies of gray almost. Right.
There's a lot of gray identifiers except for the ears.
Right.
Grays generally don't have ears at all. But it does make me wonder again that maybe they were wearing spacesuits. Mm. And maybe the ears that they saw were like antennae or you know something like that. Because also grays are notoriously not bulletproof. They are very susceptible to bodily harm. But if they were wearing spacesuits, especially spacesuits that allowed them to fly around, that's something that could be there. Hopkinsville. You go. You call them goblins.
You got them goblins.
You got them goblins.
You go, Gwen Coco.
And the great cryptid cauldron
is back.
Bring forth a cryptid.
Methogs. For your watching on the YouTube.
Hardcore country music right there. Methog.
We've all been waiting for the methog.
Ding, 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 ding.
Every Christmas, the children gather around waiting for the methog.
All right, here is a photo of a methog. It's pretty accurate.
I saw the same photo.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
That's just a warthog that's out of its element.
Yes. All right. So the methogs are mutant meth-fueled hogs and are terrorizing the hills of eastern Kentucky. In the decade or so since their first appearance, these giant rage-filled animals have destroyed cars.
That's just a normal homes. Hog.
I was gonna say, if you've not run into a wild boar, wild boars are incredibly dangerous and hard to kill.
They are. These are giant and rage-filled animals. And they have destroyed cars, homes, livestock, and have already killed several people. So, wild hogs have been roaming the hills of eastern Kentucky for centuries.
Sure.
Like most places here in the South. And while these animals can grow to gigantic sizes, they are generally harmless unless cornered and will do their best to keep out of human company.
That's fair.
That all started to change in the early 2000s when reports of enormous deformed hogs started coming in from the hills around Harlan.
Sure.
Nobody knows the exact origin of these mutant animals, but the best guess is that a pack of wild hogs came up on one of the many small chemical refining businesses located.
Chemical refining businesses. I say, chap. Are you making some methamphetamine? Excellent. Please refine it. I'll be having tea. Chemical refining business.
Yes. Yeah, throughout Harlan County.
Oh, yeah.
If you know, you know. Either in an effort to make the crystal meth he was brewing more potent or simply to cut corners in production, the particular producer seems to have been throwing in pretty much whatever he could find down at the local Walmart in a plastic bottle with a do not drink warning label. Whatever combination of chemicals he stumbled upon, it turned out to be irresistible to a pack of local hogs.
Sure. Plus, of course.
Of course.
Eat everything.
They do. Yeah.
I was about to say, what isn't irresistible to a pack of hungry hogs?
Seriously.
Plus, it had an added benefit of being laced with enough hormone-altering goodness to cause the animal's latent DNA to become active in their whole physiognomy to go, well, hog wild.
Ugh. So really, he was just making anabolic steroids,
basically.
And the hogs got them, and now they're just roid raging.
They are roid raging, and the first sightings.
Like, do you even lift, bro? And then they eat you.
They do. The first sightings of the meth hogs, as they were soon being called, happened in 2005 in the hills of Harlan County. A hunter reported being charged by an enormous hog that he estimated to be around 10 feet long and about 4 feet high and weigh about 900 pounds. It's like a water buffalo coming at you. Oh, yeah.
The pair junkies want the American version of Godzilla versus King Kong, which is meth hog versus cocaine bear.
Yes.
I don't think they fight each other. Honestly, I think they go into business.
They team up.
Yeah,
team up.
You want to make a
they're just
chemical
like,
refining business? And the meth hog's like, let's do it.
Oh, Lord. But I feel like the meth hog would be the really bad business partner because he would just eat all of the meth.
How many times do I have to tell you?
Don't eat the
merchandise.
Quit eating the product.
Y'all, there's like,
all right, come on. It's all good.
There is a movie called Boar. Maddie, I think you and I watched it together because, I'm a freak. And so it is an Australian horror film, and I loved it. I loved it. And it's about a boar that is just absolutely massive, and they can't take it down. And it goes and kills
called Razorback. That was the same because Razorback boar.
Yeah. Razorback.
Yeah. And Razorback was pretty much the same thing, just a giant boar. Don't mistake, this size is not unimaginable because hogs get huge. Mm-hmm. They do get large. I mean, and if you're estimating something that's running at you, you might exaggerate here and there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But because 10 feet long and 4 feet high is a weird long, low thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd think it'd be taller if it was that long. Mm-hmm. But I don't know enough about hogs, to be perfectly honest.
That's fair. Because,
But hogs are very dangerous.
Yes.
Sure are.
Wild boars are very dangerous.
They are. They will gore you.
And you need a pretty powerful weapon to take one down.
Mm-hmm.
Because their skin is very thick. And so they can absorb a lot of damage.
And they'd be rooting and tooting. And the hog, the meth hogs at least, also seem to have not one, but two sets of unusually long tusks.
Oh, that's interesting.
All protruding at odd angles from its mouth. So that's comforting.
Oh, yeah.
The hog came after the man very aggressively, and he had to very hurriedly climb a nearby oak tree to escape the animal. The hog repeatedly charged the tree, and the man said that he shot the beast multiple times, which seemed to, and I quote, piss it off more than anything else.
And that's a fact of hogs.
Yeah.
Hard to kill. They will chase you. Going up a tree is the best way to go. And I have heard from hog hunters before that the hog will beat on the tree. Don't be caught alone.
In hog country.
After several hours.
Frankie Westbury said that sounded like Cat Williams.
Anyways, after several hours, the hog apparently grew bored and wandered off.
Yeah.
And the hunter.
Like you do.
Well, he started to come down.
Yeah, he's like, I need more meth.
I need more meth. And the hunter returned to his truck as quickly as possible. Since that first sighting, meth hogs have been reported throughout eastern Kentucky, and the hogs have been ravaging livestock in the area. Farmers have reported countless missing chickens, dogs, goats, and even reported seeing giant hogs dragging full-grown cows off into the woods.
Holy mackerel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm having way too much fun with that button.
It's good. It's a good time.
It is.
In 2008, the meth hogs had claimed their first human victims. A family of four was camping in the Quintanilla State Forest in early September. Their tent was discovered by a ranger, completely destroyed, and their entire campsite had been trampled into the ground. Blood and traces of clothing were found in the immediate area, but no further sign of the family was ever discovered.
Wow.
Which, by the way, if you are a fan of true crime, well, not even true crime, just crime literature,
they
oftentimes say the best way to get rid of a human body is to put it in a hog pen because the hog will eat all of it.
They eat the teeth, which They'll is usually what get people.
Right, exactly.
So you didn't hear from us, though.
No, but JT and I is...
Well, we didn't put it out first. I mean, it's pretty well... I mean, and that's like... I do a lot of writing, and I will do a lot of like Google searching. And if my Google search was any indication of whether or not I'm on a FBI watch list, I'm going to jail tomorrow because I'm all about what acid does the most. How do you, if I ingest this poison, if I were to shoot a person at 40 feet,
So JT's mom and I are both freaks.
they are.
And
they get along.
We love true crime, and we've had in-depth conversations about this in a totally hypothetical way, but we completely judge people's thoughts because people usually think, well, just pour acid on the body, but it doesn't take down the teeth, and that's how you get caught. And so we were both in agreement. We're like, if for some reason we ever had to hide a body, we're going to hide it in a hog pen because it will be gone. It's very true. So it's now y'all know.
And that's a common – I want to say that Hannibal – made it very popular.
Yes.
A very popular notion that hogs will eat every bit of you.
So don't put it in an acid bath. That's just messy.
I have to tell a story, short one, because I feel like on this podcast, I will never be able to tell it. Like, I'll never have another opportunity.
Bring it.
Yes.
I used to work at Sonny's Barbecue for 5 years. Madison, you already know this.
Yes.
I had a regular. He was an old man. He would leave me a $5 bill. He'd come in full camo, and his sleeves and leg, it looks like he never washed them, but he didn't smell. He was about 60, but his sleeves and legs were like covered in blood spatter. And he's a hunter, right? So I'm thinking, you know, this is him field dressing a deer or something like that.
He just came back or something.
Exactly.
Getting some lunch after.
Exactly. And so he'd come in every single Sunday at about 10 to 11. And one day it was abnormally slow for a Sunday. So I decided to go ahead and, sit and talk to him about hunting a little bit. I thought maybe he could give me some advice. And I asked him what kind of hunting he did. And he says he does hog hunting. And I said, oh, OK, cool. Yeah. Invasive species. All right. And I'm like, what caliber do you use to kill the hog? And he says, I don't use a gun. Right. And I was like. What? I was like, what do you use?
A spear?
And he goes to his side, and I'm like, we're doing this right now. And he pulls out a massive knife.
Yeah.
And he sits in the trees above feed. I'm not kidding. This man said he sits in the trees every Sunday morning above his food plot, and he jumps down onto Mama Hog and kills her by stabbing her in the neck over and over again. And that's my story.
Well, hog hunting, and that was the preferred method was a spear it basically had like a Bowie knife at the end of a big stick.
It's like a bayonet kind of deal.
It was
right?
I'm not prepared for this.
The hand-to-hand combat with a boar.
It's adrenaline thing. Yeah. It has to be.
I went with a bow and arrow. So we were bow hunting, and he laughed at me. And I was like, what is going on? I thought you said we were bow hunting. Mm-hmm. He's like, no, we're hunting with bow. Bow was like another man.
Oh.
Yeah.
Got it.
Bow was his buddy. And so I was like, okay, well, do you have a rifle I can use? And he's like, well, we don't use rifles.
Yeah.
Because
it's exciting.
Well, I think there's something about like the impact and the chance of downing it at the right point.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you want to be right up on it and you want to stab it as many times as you possibly can.
Yeah.
I'm like,
That's full adrenaline.
Yeah, it's like you're wrong about that.
That's insane. But anyway. Okay. All right. Okay. Onward.
Onward. So these people were destroyed by meth hogs, and the entire area was covered with giant cloven hog tracks. At least one set of these tracks seemed to be from an animal with three toes on each foot. Several other similar disappearances have been reported since. It wasn't until 2010 that the first of these mutant hogs was killed. A trapper who was using a foot-gripping trap, which was a bit larger and more powerful than may have been strictly legal,
right.
It caught one of the meth hogs, and he found the furious animal already beginning to gnaw its own leg off, trying to escape.
Wow.
The man, who wished to remain anonymous out of fear of prosecution for his overzealous trapping habits, said it took him six shots directly into the creature's head at as close a range as he could manage to kill it. And this was a small specimen, only about 400 pounds.
Wow.
When he carved open the hog, what he discovered was astounding. The animal's skin was almost impossible to penetrate, and the man had to use a chainsaw to make its way into the body. The first thing that he noticed was the ungodly odor that emanated from the animal's body. The man said it smelled much worse than the usual dead hog, like eggs that had been left rotting in the sun.
Wow.
The usual thick layer of fat found under a hog's skin was, in this case, laced with a thick webbing of cartilage.
Oh, fascinating.
Very. The combination of cartilage and fat would be flexible when the animal was moving.
It's
but
like armor.
Yeah, right? But compressed into an incredibly firm layer when struck directly, essentially functioning like a bulletproof
Kevlar,
vest.
Kevlar, right.
Literally.
Yeah. Whoa.
The meth hog's internal organs were also quite a sight. The beast had two livers, four kidneys, and a large number of unusual lumpy tumors throughout its body. Hmm. More room to carry the meth. The creature also had an unusual case of meth mouth.
Oh
my gosh.
With 6 8-inch tusks protruding at odd angles from its mouth and two additional rows of teeth in its jaws.
Keep going.
To top it all off, the hog was outfitted with four testicles. The hunter burnt the body, saying, "Ain't no way in hell I was gonna eat that."
No, sir. Oh my gosh, that's insane.
If all these mutant hogs are as well equipped as the one that was trapped and killed, it could explain their unusually aggressive behavior. Male hogs can get very aggressive when it's mating time, and with double the amount of hormones coursing through their bodies, they must have been unstoppable. The meth hogs seem like they are breeding and spreading through eastern Kentucky, causing damage, threatening lives and livestock, and just generally causing all kinds of trouble.
So this is a real thing.
Yeah.
Right, right. I mean, it's possible that it's not meth related.
Right.
It's possible that we're just dealing with some kind of other mutation, evolutionary flaw, inbreeding situation.
Right. Like the deer, the rotting deer syndrome, right, or whatever. Have you heard about that? Zombie deer?
Zombie deer.
Yeah. But yes. So yeah, moving on, we're going to draw our next one as I spill my coffee all over.
I'll do
the chaos level.
Cauldron of Doom. Mm-hmm. All right. What have I got here? What I've got here is, sounds dirty, but okay. Pope Lick Monster.
Nice. The Pope Lick Monster.
The Swiss Guard will have something to say about that.
So here's the thing with the Pope Lick Monster. If you've never been to Kentucky, there's all sorts of places with the last word of the name lick. Maze Lick. Yeah. Blue Lick. Pope Lick. All the... Why? I don't know. But
that's why the Pope travels in that encased vehicle.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
The Pope Mobile.
So the Public Monster is a well-known urban legend from Louisville, Kentucky,
where we're going.
Specifically associated with the Public Creek area. This legend has been a part of local folklore for many years and centers around a creature said to inhabit the area around the Public train trestle. Now, the Public Monster is often described as a human-goat hybrid with grotesque features. Hmm. It typically is depicted with the body of a man with the lower torso of a goat. Kind of like...
A pan.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, a satyr.
Yes. Complete with fur, hooves, and horns. Some variations of the legend also describe it as having alabaster skin.
And it's very interesting because encounters with satyrs are not uncommon. As a matter of fact, there's a book that a man wrote, I think in the early part of the 20th century, about his encounter with a fawn being a satyr and or creature, half goat, half man. And he was actually brought to Pan, the god Pan. Pan is one of the strangest gods of the Greek pantheon because he predates Greece.
Exactly.
He is actually borrowed into the system, and he has a lot of strange things. But one of the most intriguing ideas behind Pan is it's where we get the word pandemonium.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Pan is able to create mass hysteria. And so when you have that notion of mass hysteria, when you have that concept that it can create this behavior, this animalistic behavior, coming into contact with these creatures oftentimes is followed by wild craziness, wild insanity.
Exactly. So this one is quite interesting. So it has alabaster skin and wide unblinking eyes, which is quite
that would do it.
Concerning. So the origin of the legend, the exact origins of the Public Monster legend are unclear, but it has been a part of local folklore for decades. The story likely grew from a combination of heresy and the
that'll happen.
Yeah. And the eerie nature of the train trestle area and the human fascination with the supernatural.
Sure.
So the Public Monster legend likely evolved from a mix of local folklore and storytelling. Rural and wooded areas often give rise to tales of mysterious creatures. And the Public area with its imposing train trestle provided a perfect backdrop for such stories. Mm-hmm. You see that in a lot of places, like where entities or ghost stories will just get plopped down in places where, like, you know, that'd be a creepy place for this city.
And anytime you cross water. So anytime you cross over water, bridges, especially trolls under bridges, creatures under bridges, ghosts on bridges, goat man's bridge, all of that comes from ancient fear of crossing water without the permission of the spirits that guard that water.
Exactly. So the Public train trestle itself is a significant element in the origin of the legend. This large imposing structure, which is genuinely hazardous, could easily inspire ominous tales. The danger associated with the trestle from real accidents and fatalities may have contributed to the mythologizing of the area.
That's a tough word.
It is a really tough word. Yes.
Too many syllables.
Exactly. And the description of the Public Monster as a part man, part goat creature taps into a longstanding mythological motif. Human-animal hybrids are common in folklore worldwide, often symbolizing the crossing of boundaries or the manifestations of primal fears. So the legend might have been influenced by other myths and folklore, such as European tales of fauns and satyrs, or even the American folklore surrounding creatures like Bigfoot. The aspect of the monster using hypnosis or voice mimicry to lure people to their deaths is a modern twist typical of urban legends. It adds to a psychological horror element to the tale, making it more compelling and eerie. One version of the legend suggests that the Public Monster was a former circus performer who was mistreated and now seeks revenge.
Ooh.
There you go.
This narrative could be influenced by the historical reality of freak shows, which often featured people with unusual physical characteristics and were popular in the 19th and early 20th centuries. Like many legends, the story of the Popelik monster probably evolved over time. Each telling would add new layers to the story, gradually transforming it into a legend known today. The local community and media likely played a role in both spreading and embellishing the legend. Covering in alleged sightings or accidents at the trestle would contribute to the myth's presence or persistence. Yes, so basically the Popelik monster mimics people and lures them under the bridge like a troll.
How interesting.
Yeah, which is quite fascinating. So it's, but yeah, there is not a ton on it. And maybe when we go to Louisville, we'll be able to like ask
we'll swing by that trestle. That's absolutely cool. It's interesting too, because something that happens at bridges is some kind of phenomenon that causes water that runs under a bridge to sound like a baby crying.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have Crybaby Bridge in multiple places. Like the first time I heard it, I was like, oh, that's really creepy.
Yes.
And then somebody else told me the story, but they're in a totally different area.
Right.
They're like, oh yeah, there's Crybaby Bridge right over there. I was like, wait, I thought it was in South Carolina. It's like, no, it's right over there.
No, it's right over here.
And so I've heard the Crybaby Bridge a couple times. I was like, so there must be something about bridges and the acoustics and running water that mimics it. Or there is some weird entity.
Yeah, I was about to say.
That hangs out around bridges and puts out the distress call. Because a crying baby is a distress call that should draw a concerned human.
Exactly.
Like, you know, you want to trap somebody, make a sound of a distressed baby.
Baby, so they'll come right after.
And people will come right after it.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
So, you know, that's an interesting thing. The idea of a mimic sitting there going, well, you know, people haven't come for the baby in a while. Maybe if I just sounded like a person.
Exactly.
Yes.
So the legend suggests that the creature uses hypnosis or voice mimicry to lure trespassers onto the train trellis, where they meet their demise either by falling from the trellis or being hit by an oncoming train.
There you go.
So the central to the legend of the Popelik train trestle itself, which is a real structure, the trestle is a dangerous and off-limits area, but it has been the site of numerous accidents and death, often due to individuals trying to investigate the legends across the trestle.
So they were lured there by the creature, yes. Regardless of anything. That legend is true.
Mm-hmm.
They were lured by the monster and they died.
Exactly.
Wow.
Local authorities and community leaders have repeatedly warned the public about the dangers of exploring the Popelik train trestle. Despite no evidence of the creature's existence, the legend continues to attract thrill seekers and curious people, leading to real life hazards.
Wow.
Well, that's interesting, too, that Goatman's Bridge has a very similar vibe to it.
Exactly.
You know, with a very similar creature, very similar vibe, and it makes you wonder about the wildfire of local legend.
Right. And the most significant and real encounters related to the Popelik monster legend involve accidents of the trestle. The trestle is a dangerous place, and there have been multiple fatalities and injuries over the years. These are often when individuals are caught on the trestle by an oncoming train while looking for the monster. While there are anecdotal reports of sightings of the Popelik monster, these are typically vague and unverified. They often describe a humanoid figure with goat-like features consistent with the legend, if they make it out alive.
What you should do is like show up on one day and just tie a trail cam to the trestle.
That's interesting.
3 or 4 days later.
That's smart.
That's super interesting. So yeah, we'll ask people while we're up there, you know, like, hey, how you
tell
ever
us about your goat man.
We won't tell the police, but
we'll tell the police.
But yes.
So one more?
I think we are.
Do you want to? Oh, we're out of time.
We are out of time.
We are out of time.
But yes, hopefully you guys enjoyed this. And honestly, we could probably do other states with this kind of concept.
Yeah.
It's fun.
I think it's great.
We should go state by state, because every state has their specific cryptid that isn't anywhere else.
Exactly. So if you would like to hear us do that, let us know. And if you have a local cryptid or entity you want to add to the hat for your state, let us
know. Absolutely.
Yeah. Because be a ghost mail.
A lot of local, like the more localized an entity is, the less likely it is to be on the watch list of these, you know, statewide things, because people have, you know, the town monster, you know, the creature. Like, you very rarely hear about the plat eye anywhere but Savannah south of Savannah.
Right.
So, you know, when you get around to it, the more localized a creature is, the more intriguing it is to mm-hmm. us because mm-hmm. it's something that we're not familiar with.
Exactly. So yes, I think that is a great idea and we should definitely do it, but we are out of time, y'all. So we're going to wrap things up. Thank you guys again so much for listening to today's episode. Don't forget to vote on Connect Savannah. That is open until the end of March, I believe. Mm-hmm.
I think so.
And
I thought it was February 6th and March 6th.
Oh. That could be correct. Go and check the fan base page. Ashley and Dawn have all of those dates up there. But yes, and you'll be able to find the link there. So definitely go ahead and vote if you are feeling so compelled. Also, if you want to become a para junkie, we are going to be rearing up here really quickly for Waverly Hills. So there's going to be a lot of really fun content over on Patreon and all the fun content from the Conjuring House that not everybody gets to see. So I highly encourage you to join us over there. But with that, my name is Madison Timmons.
I'm Chris Soucy.
And stay spooky, y'all.